Casper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Casper
and Murray.
Casper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Casper
and Murray.
Casper
and Murray.
Hey, all right, from the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Casper and Murray here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. We're both here, physically, mentally, I don't know. I know for myself, not so much. It's going to take me a little bit to get up to speed here, Chris. Last night we had the Beasley Media holiday party.
Yeah, good time was had by all.
Yeah, and I've been basically in a self-imposed detox since the road trip to see the Patriots
in Nashville
get destroyed by the Tennessee Titans. So I think I had 4, maybe 5 drinks last night, and I feel like I had 50. Like, this was the last thing I wanted to do today, truthfully. And so I just, I'm like, oh man, you know what I really want to do? And I didn't even notice this until, you know, I was doing like show prep and whatever, that this is the token one Saturday in December that the NFL has a couple of games. And if I had it my way, like the lazy gym, the hungover gym, what I'd like to do is just, you know, still be in bed and then wake up around, oh, I don't know, 1, have myself a brunch type thing, and then go back to bed and watch these games. Because the Saturday games in the NFL, they feel like such a treat. I love them. And to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong here, there's really only been one, at least in our lifetime, that involved the Patriots. And you got to go back 21 years against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, that's a good point. What I
was that? Oh, you know how those years are seared inside my angry brain.
Well, the Joe Namath Susie Colbert game, that wasn't on a Saturday night. Was that on a Sunday night or a Monday night? Probably a Monday.
I want to kiss you. I think that was a Monday nighter. Yeah. But the Saturday slate, I think it's only had the Patriots once in our lifetimes, and it was December. I was looking it up too, because I remember this being at it and going to that game on a Saturday and pregame and all that. I was like, this is the best, because then you get to be hungover all day on Sunday and watch the rest of the NFL. Oh, it should happen more often as it pertains to the Pats. But again, only that one time I can remember, December 13th, 1997. It's against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers who beat the Patriots twice that year, because you had the 7-6 playoff game a few weeks later in Pittsburgh. But the Pats, I remember leading like 20-13, 21-13 in that game. Bledsoe throws one of his patented back-breaking interceptions at the worst possible time. It was Kevin Henry that picked him off. He just tried.
Was
to,
it
like,
the one on like a screen pass type
yep,
of thing?
I remember the one.
That's one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen.
I mean, it was like the most token Bledsoe pick.
Yeah. Peak Bledsoe pick.
I MF him to the heavens and nearly get thrown out of the place. They end up tying the game, losing overtime. But that should happen more often. What I would really like to do today was be hungover and watch Jets at Texans at 4:30 and Broncos and Browns tonight.
So you know there are Saturday games next week too, right?
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, well, those are fake, because it's the weekend of Christmas. Like, those don't matter. I like the ones that are like the third week, the week leading into, you know, the madness of having to do all your shopping and get ready, and everyone's about to take off for the holiday. No, it's that, it's this weekend, the 13th, 14th, 15th, around that time on the calendar where you get that one token Saturday.
So you seem pretty strident on this, but I just want to remind you that next Saturday night is Ravens Chargers.
Oh. Oh, well, that one's actually a good one. And even, well, look, even this Jets-Texans game today is interesting as it pertains to the Pats. And it's funny, like, when I think about that one game that I'm mentioning, too, with the stupid Cordell Stewart Steelers and Bledsoe and that terrible pick, like, that's really where the genesis of my true hatred for the Steelers comes from. I hate that team and their fans more than any other team. Oh, yeah. You see, sometimes people have that reaction. Chris just looked at me like, boo. Like,
I didn't know that.
Confused dog. No, it's true. Like, not the Canadiens, not the Jets, not the Giants, not the Yankees. I hate the Steelers more than any other team in all of sports. It's just something. It's the institutionalized arrogance that comes with them and all the championships and their fans and their terrible, terrible way that they talk, their accent, the Stillers.
You hate that accent?
Oh, the Pennsylvania accent is just the worst. You get it with the Philadelphia people, too. But
Water.
Pittsburgh, water ice, all of that. Ice cold Yingling beer here. Like, oh, I can't stand them. And it started with that. It started around that time. The Bill Cowher, big chin, like, we're going to run ground and pound with the bus stops.
Yeah, you know, you're a big Jerome Bettis guy.
Ugh. guy does not deserve to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But I digress. We do have Patriots Steelers tomorrow, and I'm already like angry about it, even though they haven't obviously yet to play the game. Because it has more to do with the Patriots and the way that they're playing. And I thought you had a good column in the Boston Globe this week, or just a couple of days ago. If the Patriots don't beat the Steelers, we'll know there's something really wrong. Now, they're coming off this hideous last-second loss to the Miami Dolphins last week, a team in which I said we would learn more about the Pats in that game than even this one, because I think that that Dolphins team stinks, that they are, what, 7-6 or 7-5, whatever the hell that they are now?
7-6.
7-6. Is one of the more, it's not indicative of who they really are. I think the Dolphins really suck. They really do. They have a couple of talented players there, like Kenny Stills. I do think he's a really decent wide receiver. Some guys are okay on defense.
The guy who slid instead of getting a first down, and maybe never even comes down to the lateral.
Well, this is the type of stuff we should be talking about, Chris, and how stupid that team is, because they tried to keep giving it away, but the Patriots were just, well, dumber in that game, and it was so uncharacteristic of how they are and how they're coached, but this has been an uncharacteristic year for them. They've been dumb. And they're consistently inconsistent this year, which is so frustrating. And it felt like for almost two quarters, the first half of that game, they were doing what I thought that they should do against that Dolphins team. They were on their way to blowing them out. After that second block punt and they get the great field position, it's like, okay, they're about to put their foot on the throat of this stupid team, and this is going to be a blowout, and we're going to be looking at like a 41-28 type of game. And then Brady turns into a pumpkin. And he forgets that they don't have a timeout. He misses a wide-open Chris Hogan, and that game goes to complete hell. And the defense was garbage again on the road. So I'm with you 100% in this column that you wrote in the Globe. If the Patriots don't beat the Steelers, we'll know there's something really wrong. I already think there's something wrong, but there's something really wrong if they don't do what they normally do against this team tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that they normally own. I mean, they've won the last five this decade. They've won 6 of 7. During those seven games, they've averaged 32 points per game against the Steelers. This is a team where they're normally dialed in against these guys. The Steelers tend to be a little, we do what we do, and we're more talented than you. And the Patriots are a team that normally, when they know what the other team is going to do, they're very good at combating it. So I think this is a game, and it's not just the opponent, too. It's the spot, right? This is one where people are sort of starting to question the Patriots again. It's on the road against a fellow contender, and I recognize that Pittsburgh has lost three in a row, but this is a spot where a normal Patriots team comes out with the victory. So between the opponent, normal Patriots team beats them, the spot, normal Patriots team answers the bell. I think that you look at this, and if they lose this game, you start to say, well, this isn't a normal Patriots team. You know, the grinding they've had to do this year to get to this point is not just grinding and sort of groping so they can just flip the switch when it matters. This is who they are. They're a team like, Brady, you played the sound yesterday on Felger and Maz. The idea, they asked him about sort of going on the road, and he's like, well, we're trying, and we'll see. At this point in the year, in December, when the Patriots always preach that they're peaking, they're playing their best football, this is when you want to be playing your best, and you have the quarterback pretty much saying, I don't know. I don't know how good we are. I don't know what we're going to do in Pittsburgh. We'll see. I don't know what to expect from this team.
Yeah, and this is typically, as anyone knows, it's been paying attention the last 20 years, where they start to pull away from the pack. This is when they're playing their best football, and they haven't. That way that they lost that game last week, and it wasn't just that one play at the very end. The kicker was, Steven Gostkowski was, kind of a puddle. Brady turns into a pumpkin in the second half, and you can't convince me that he's not hurt or there's something going on with him. The defense, again, and where I started to think, especially after the Vikings game, and shame on me for being tricked into thinking this, that they were the actual strength of this team, even more than the offense, and then they can't stop anybody, and Kenny Stills goes off for like a buck 20 and a touchdown, and if it wasn't for his stupidity, he essentially has like a perfect game. They get shredded by Ryan Tannehill, and their penchant for making bum quarterbacks, even going back into last year with guys like Blake Bortles, Nick Foles, who makes the deal with the devil, and then Tannehill this past week, their penchant for making guys like that look like world beaters is infuriating, and I just don't understand it. And especially this year on the road, even guys like Matt Stafford, who I think is so average. Bortles, again, they shred him earlier.
Well, Mariota, who, is
stinks.
I think he doesn't stink, but I think he's an average NFL passer. Now, he has some mobility, but as a passer, I don't think he's anything special. I mean, he lit him up without a lot of weapons.
Yeah.
So there is something, and I wonder how much of that is talent and how much of that is scheme. Because I still, when I look at the Patriots versus other teams, and I know depending on where you look and where you get your pressure stats from, they're in the top five in the league in pressure. But I think, let's be honest, stats can lie and be manipulated. When you watch them on a week-to-week basis, do you feel like this is a defense that dictates to the opponent?
No.
And I still feel like they're a little bit caught up in the old NFL before they changed the rules, where it's like, you know what? We're just going to wait for the other guy to screw up. And I think sometimes Bill looks at the film and says some of the things that you're saying, like, this guy's not that good. He can't beat us. We just don't want to give up the big play. We'll make this guy complete 25 passes and throw for 300 yards. Except for then they go out and do it, because the way the rules are in today's NFL, you know, even the biggest bum quarterbacks can basically do that on a good day. You're daring these guys to do it, and they're doing it.
On Brady, do you think he's healthy?
No, I don't. And it's interesting because you mentioned this is an uncharacteristic year, and there's a lot of criticism, obviously, of coaching decisions that happen in the Miami game. But I go back to the Tennessee game and where I think Brady got hurt on that stupid double pass from Edelman.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that. It's the fourth quarter of that game. Look, they still were trying to make a comeback, but shouldn't they have shelved that play after Super Bowl 52?
What are you doing
running that play with your 41-year-old quarterback? He's not even good at it at this point of his career.
And that's what made it, well, especially with the timing of that game. I mean, essentially that felt like it was over, right?
Yeah. Were you still in the stadium at that point, or had you left?
No, I was still there.
Okay.
It was, when did I leave? Not shortly after. It was where I said, F this. You do Brian Hoyer on your own time. When they put him in, I'm like, I'm out. I don't care if there's 10 minutes left. I got drinking to do. No, that's what makes it so infuriating, that the timing of that play, that he got hurt on
it.
It wasn't just, oh, he got tripped up by the turf monster. It looked like something went wrong there, and he hasn't been the same since.
No.
So he was great in that first half, the best he's looked since Super Bowl 52, and then maybe the shot he might have taken before the game wore off or something, because he looked like a completely different quarterback in the second half. In fact, he looked like how he did against the Tennessee Titans, ducking out of throws, feeling phantom pressure.
Yeah, I mean, the miss for Hogan down there was big. On that last possession of the half, which obviously was punctuated by him forgetting the timeouts, but everyone's remarked on him. He spun out of that throw. I mean, he didn't hang in there and make that throw. He spun out. He was trying to protect himself. I think we've seen a little more of that this year, you know, given age. And I think what you see from him, I will never, ever question Tom Brady's toughness, ever, because he is tough. But I think what you see is a little more discretion now and a little more self-preservation.
Tell you, though, I hate the Steelers more than just about anything, and I hate a lot of things in this world. But the Steelers, their fans, oh, not enough bad can happen to that team, and especially big fat Ben Roethlisberger, that fat pervert. Oh, I hate them so much. But even go back, like I said, to Cordell Stewart and those teams, and Bill Cowher, hate them. Hate them. I'm still picking them tomorrow, though. I'll explain why. Next, you're in a bit of a hungover, Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's just a different team this year, and we've tried, put a lot into it, and we're trying to obviously do great in both, and just hasn't turned out that way. But we're hanging in there. I mean, we're hanging in there.
You're always trying to improve. You can always be better. You know, the more and more we play together each week, you're building on your foundation. So I wouldn't say we're where we want to be, but we're trusting the process of going out and working hard each day in practice and trying to improve and see where that brings us.
Tom Brady and Julian Edelman on the road woes of the Patriots this year. 3-4 on the road. Win tomorrow. We'll get them at 500, and that'll be it in terms of regular season road games. The last two, Bills, Jets, at Gillette Stadium. But that was the comment that stood out to you, Chris. It is Gasper Murray, 98.5 Sports, from Brady yesterday, where he's just kind of hemming and hawing about, we'll see. Because he was asked, you know, why do you think that this year's Patriots team is struggling on the road? And he really didn't have an answer. And it certainly didn't sound, he certainly didn't sound confident talking about it.
He's not going to come out and, like, guarantee a win. Like, I get that. But, you know, normally in a situation like that, he would revert back to things the team has done this year or the week of practice or just something. And there, he just seemed very non-committal about the capability of the team on the road.
Well, do you think that some of that has to do with the residual after effect of the loss last week in Miami? Do you think that that's kind of a mental backbreaker for them? Because they're all saying the right things this week, saying, no, we're going to move on from it. And nobody knows how to compartmentalize like this team, specifically Brady and Belichick, but a lot of young players, a lot of new faces, guys like Adrian Claiborne and Cordero Patterson. So,
yeah, sure.
You know, it could, a loss like that, I know how I would act. I'd still be a mess today. I still am, even just as a fan. So, I don't know. Is it just have that 09 feel where, you know, it wouldn't take much for them to have their backs broken in a play like that, just like that 09 team did with the 4th-and-2 situation that happened in, against the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think mentally a play like that, you can be in a situation where it lingers longer than it should. The Patriots, as you mentioned, are normally pretty good for, about moving on from it. But look, as much as they try and create a wall between the outside world and Patriot Place, some of that stuff seeps in. Everybody, all those guys know that they haven't played well on the road and that they've been a different team on the road. And so you feel that pressure. You know that. And so as much as they try and, you know, basically isolate and insulate themselves, they know. And trust me, if they win, they'll be talking about it. They'll be talking about the fact that, you know, we know we weren't great on the road and, you know, people had doubted us on the road and we knew we had to come here and we had something to prove. So, I mean, you know, that's real. I mean, that's real. And I that's the other reason I like them in this game, though, is because I think this is one of those spots where their back's against the wall. People are doubting them. There's already, you know, there are people out there sort of saying, is this signs of the decline of the dynasty? Is this the beginning of the end? All that stuff. And that's normally when they answer the bell. You know, obviously there have been seasons that have been anomalies and outliers. And so you look at it and say, okay, is this one of those, you know, anomaly seasons, or are they going to revert to form, even like say in like a 2011 where you're like, okay, this team is flawed, but still at the end of the day, they're going to be the Patriots. And they ended up in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, you can lump me in with one of those people. As you know, I'm an eternal pessimist, Chris, and I've thought it's felt weird since the beginning. I had them pegged at 11-5 before they even played the first game of the year against the Houston Texans. They lose this, they'll win the next two, they would be 11-5, and I don't really like their chances of even getting to the AFC Championship game. I just think Brady's not right physically. The defense stinks. You look at this team's record on the road and how the defense specifically has played on the road. I just don't think that that's going to change. And I think an argument could be made for this Pittsburgh team, even though I don't believe in them all that much either.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they've lost three in a row. Probably should have been four, but they pulled it out of their collective butts to beat Jacksonville a month back. But you could make the argument this Steelers team is the most offensively talented team that they've played since the Kansas City Chiefs. And with the way that this secondary reverted to the way that they played last week, and they give up like almost $150 to Kenny Stills. Now you get a deal with Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster, who are arguably the best duo in the league. You know, it's either them or Thielen and Diggs in Minnesota. And as much as I despise Roethlisberger and as inconsistent as he can be, he is a hell of a lot better quarterback at home than he is on the road. I'll even simplify it further. Chris, if the Steelers beat Oakland last week, I'd feel better about the Patriots' chances tomorrow. It's such a must-win for Pittsburgh tomorrow.
Sure. Yeah.
That just feels so ominous. That's another thing that looms over this game, and it's, you know, I know what the record is. I know Brady's track record of success against this team. It doesn't really matter that they have to go to Pittsburgh because they've stomped this team time and again. Even if it's been close like last year, something seems to go their way, like the Jesse James catch-non-catch type of thing. I just think it's been too weird of a year. They suck on the road. The defense especially stinks on the road. I don't think Brady's right. I don't care that there's nobody on the injury report this week. They're not that healthy. At least Brady's not. So I don't like the spot. It's more about the spot and my lack of confidence in the Patriots than anything else.
Yeah, see, I feel the exact opposite. I think the spot is one that's conducive to the Patriots answering the bell. You know, again, if this is a normal Patriots team, and that's why I wrote what I wrote, I think we'll learn something significant about them. If this is a spot where they don't win against this team on the road, people doubting them, coming off a crushing loss in Miami, really an all-time loss in terms of, you know, ignominious ways you can lose a football game. If they don't, then I look at it and say, okay, this is a different year, and there is something fundamentally flawed about this team.
Frank the Tank, you're first up here this morning on Gaspar Murray. Hi, Frank.
Yeah, morning, guys. How's it going?
Good, Frank. What's up?
Not too much. Look, I mean, first and foremost, I think Tom Brady just reassures my opinion that no athlete should ever get married and have children until they're done with their career, because she has turned him into a fruit loop, into an absolute fruit loop. And I don't care how hot she is. Okay. All women are nuts like that. But look, as far as the team goes, look, right now, the next three games, win them out, see what happens, see where you end up at all costs, protect the quarterback. Get the bye. I don't care if they're one or two seed, but the most important thing right now, get the bye. Win your next three games. See what happens. See who your opponent is. I still think the AFC is wide open, even though I feel that San Diego is probably the most dangerous team, or LA, excuse me. They're probably the most dangerous team right now in the AFC. I still think it's wide open, and anything could happen. The Pats could still end up hosting an AFC championship game here. And Jim, get yourself some Gatorade, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Pedialyte. That's what I should have stopped and got this morning instead of a coffee. Four drinks. That's all I had. It's not like I was out on a bender. I was in bed by like 10:30.
Wait, but you're on this detox thing. You know?
Self-imposed detox since Tennessee.
Yeah.
And four drinks felt like 50. And boy, it's been a tractor pull thus far mentally.
Well, also, I mean, I hate to bring it up, but you know, we're around the same age. I mean, you know, you don't bounce back the way you used to.
Oh, it's awful now. And it's usually the second day that's the worst. So the first day of the hangover, like, okay, this sucks. For whatever reason, it's day two. While it's still trying to get out of your system, it's worse. Don't get old, people. McCone, what are you again, like 24?
No, 28.
28. Yeah, 28. Give it, in 10 years, you'll realize. Remember this conversation. At one point, you're like, that old bald Murray guy. I remember him saying to me at one point, and
that Murray guy, when he was alive, man, he was right.
And his cohort, Gasper, there, too. I remember them saying, those two olds telling me, boy, the hangovers are going to get bad one day. And boy, were they right, because it does. It hits you like a sledgehammer. All of a sudden, you're like, no, why? What have I done? I should stop drinking occasionally. But you can't, because that's what makes life a little bit more interesting. Speaking of McCone, he's going to get you caught up here in the Sports Hub headlines, tell you what happened with the Bruins and the Celtics last night. Speaking of the Celtics, we have the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up in just about a half hour. Touch on them and their continued winning streak and the leadership qualities, or maybe lack thereof, of Kyrie Irving. But we come back, we'll continue to take calls on the Pats, and I want to revisit this game last week in Miami, because, boy, that really was, for me, that was like such a mental backbreaker and such an eye-opening loss for the Patriots. We'll do that right after McCone's headlines here on Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Sports Hub headlines.
Hey, Celtics have now won 8 in a row after topping the Hawks last night, 129-108. Kyrie Irving, a game-high 24 points. Gordon Hayward, 19 off the bench in the win. Brad Stevens on his team.
Well, we're not perfect, but we're really trying to play well together, and I think that's the most important thing. I thought we overshared a couple of possessions today, and then we went through a brief stretch in the second quarter that was bad. But other than that, you know, I thought our guys had good intentions and played well.
Celtics are right back at it tonight when they visit the Pistons. Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell have the call right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, with coverage getting underway at 6:30. Bizarre night in the NBA last night. Reports were out that a three-way trade between the Grizzlies, Wizards, and Suns was essentially done. It was going to send Trevor Ariza to Washington. However, all fell apart when the teams realized Memphis wanted to trade Marshawn Brooks instead of Dylan Brooks. That mix-up caused the whole thing again to fall apart. No deal taking place. Bruins had their three-game win streak snapped, falling to the Penguins last night 5-3. Boston actually battled back to tie this one up at 3 in the third before giving up two more goals. Bruins will host the Sabres tomorrow, and the Patriots had perfect practice attendance yesterday as they gear up for their showdown against the Steelers tomorrow. Of course, as always, you can catch all the action right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Sports Hub headlines brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Visit their newest location in Weymouth at 190 Main Street for a 15-minute oil change. You can stay in your car and no appointment is ever needed. I'm Tim McCone, Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Sean Silver has your next update in 30 minutes.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Tannehill throws down the middle, caught by Stills, laterals back to Butler, or rather Parker, who flips it to Drake. He runs across before New England, angling inside, the 25, 20, 15, 10, he's going to win the foot race to the end zone! The Dolphins are going to win it!
Are you
shitting
me?
And the lateral runs the twice, and Drake takes it in, and the Patriots stand stunned in disbelief.
Where the f*** are they all?
I don't know what to say.
What the f***?
Was it Gronk back there?
Yeah, Gronkowski deep. He almost blows his knee out trying to get to the sideline.
You've got to be kidding me.
That last play will linger as really one of the worst memories in Patriots history, at least with the recent past.
That summarizes everything down here. It really does.
Paul, get ready to never forget this one.
The Dolphins have won it over the Pats, 34-33.
Are you shitting me?
A stunner last Sunday, 34-33. Patriots blow it to the Dolphins. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Chris, you asked me in the commercial break how I handled it. And I wish I was more, like, crazed and acted like an uncaged animal at the end of that game. No, I was more stunned than anything else. Like, I was getting ready to do the post game with Beetle down at Splitsville. And it was me, him, Jim Louth, the producer, just, you know, with our headphones on. And that's the audio was ahead of the TV broadcast. And we were all collectively were just kind of sitting there stunned. And then when I actually saw it, you knew it was happening. So I don't know. I couldn't even get mad. I was just like, Yeah, I was a little bit pissed, but I was actually upset at myself. I should be more mad about this, but it was just, how can you not be stunned? What did I just see and hear? How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, stunning. Absolutely stunning. And obviously the play is stunning, and it's fluky, and you don't expect it. But you also look at it, at least I did, and think, well, the one team that would never happen to is a Bill Belichick coach team.
Right.
You know, and
so you wrote this week, too, saying, yeah. You know, look, when this team loses, we're quick to blame individual players.
Yeah.
But why don't we collectively get on Bill Belichick? And you're right on that. I mean, if I have to draw up the old school Eddie Andelman blame pie, well, I'm giving like 60% of it to Belichick on that. By the way, you know, so yesterday on Felger and Mez, we were kind of all ragging on Andy Reid and the way the Chiefs lost that game. We'll touch on that later. But, you know, he ends that game with what? A timeout in his pocket?
Timeout in his pocket. Didn't call a timeout before the 2-point play. You know, let your defense get a look at it. Call the timeout. Talk about how you want to defend it. Go back out there. Maybe you even force the Chargers to change their play, but at least you've gotten a look at it. And in fact, Philip Rivers said after that game, it was a play they had used earlier in the game and they just dressed it up. So maybe you take the timeout, you think about it, and you sort of say, oh, this looks like similar. They just flipped it. You know, but nope. Just take that timeout to the press conference with you, Andy.
Well, on that, Belichick did the same thing with
this
game.
Yes, he did.
So are you sure, Bill? Like, this is the personnel you want to have on the field? Are you sure you want to have a hobbled Rob Gronkowski out there on this play? Are you sure that Ryan Tannehill, do you think he's going to be able to throw a Hail Mary with a bad shoulder and a bad ankle that he injured in that game? You sure about this? Sure, you maybe just want to, I don't know, use that last timeout that's now rendered useless, you know, just to get a better look at this
just
thing?
Just to talk about
just
it.
Just to talk about it.
Like, if they do this, we want to do this. If they do that, we want to do that. You know, personnel. I still don't know the answer to the question. And Tom Curran, I think, asked it, and it sort of got batted aside by Bill. But do they have separate personnel groups based on whether they think it's a Hail Mary or it's going to be a chase situation with a hook and lateral? You know, are there different personnel groups? I find it hard to believe that the same personnel grouping, one that doesn't have Devin McCourty, who's one of your best tacklers and one of your fastest players, the same personnel grouping that defends the Hail Mary is the one that you want on the field for the lateral. I find that hard to believe. And if that's the case, you know what? That's wrong too. And now you have to go back and revise that. You probably should make that change.
It's unbelievable. Again, Ryan Tannehill is literally not going to be able to throw 75 yards when he's got a hurt shoulder and a hurt ankle. That game, the more I thought about it, I mean, it really was. So the more time I had with it to marinate on it, it was one of those old school late 90s Pete Carroll era, give you the sting week ruiner type of games. Like in this era, or at least in the last handful of years, I can't remember one that lingered with me for a few days like that one. The end of 2015, the Jets overtime loss where they elected to kick.
Yes.
And, you know, yep. They lose that game inexplicably in that bad last month.
Brady
of the
never
season.
Touches the ball in overtime.
That same year, the Brock Osweiler loss in Denver, you know,
Chris
a lot
Harper.
Of mistakes. Chris Harper making that, you know, fumbling that punt. You know, there were some like that. But this one, the way they lost this, ooh, just a mess in all three phases. And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but my overall point on that is, look, Bill's the greatest coach of all time. He deserves all the credit he gets. But I just feel like it's a no-win for the players. They perform well, and you give all the credit to the coach. They don't make a tackle, and all of a sudden it's all on the players. They should have made, and the coach gets none of the blame. So, I mean, that's a terrible situation to be in. The other thing I'd say about that game last week, Jim, is just to crystallize it, the two primary principles of your pretty much unprecedented reign over the NFL both committed situational football malpractice at the end of halves and killed you. Think about that. Brady and Belichick, two of the smartest, two of the best to ever do their jobs, at the end of each half, both were asleep at the switch.
Yeah, so this is where Brady's complicit in here, too, and I give him, you know, maybe 10 or 15% of said blame pie. That was as dialed in as Brady has been since the Super Bowl against the Eagles. First half, tremendous.
Yeah, he was awesome.
And then whatever happened after that Gronkowski touchdown, something popped in his leg, maybe it was like he said in his weekly interview across the street. It had to do with the brace, but I don't really believe
that. No, I'm not buying that.
Something turned Brady into a pumpkin in that second half of that game. He forgets the timeout. He misses Chris Hogan wide open. He's bailing out of throws. He looked like he did against the Tennessee Titans in early November, and that was jarring to watch. It's like, did something wear off in terms of medication you might have had before the game? Did something pop in your leg? Like I said, it was just the numbers prove it, too. This isn't just your eyeballs. With that Gronk touchdown, Brady in that first half, 16 to 20, 212 yards, three touchdowns. After that play, 11 to 23 for 146 yards, zero touchdowns. And again, he looked kind of like how he looked against the Tennessee Titans. So I just think that there's something off with him physically. You know, it's just, it's looked that way for most of the year. And I don't know. I don't know how that loss doesn't linger a little bit with some of those players. Maybe some of the more inexperienced guys, some of the new faces. I don't know how you can walk away from that and be like, ah, no, everything's going to be fine. They're going to be fine in Pittsburgh just because of their track record there. Dan in Cranston, you're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Dan.
Hey, morning, Jim. I feel your pain there, brother. Hope you get better soon.
Oh, thank you.
I used to think when I was growing up, signs of aging for me were like not being able to hit a golf ball as far or not being able to get it up. But it ended up being drinking, not getting the load, getting the load on and not being able to get up like I used to. That was how I knew I was getting old.
And everything hurts all the time, too, Dan. Knees.
Yeah, no, I hear, and only four beers. I know the feeling, man. So real quick, 2 points. Chris, I'm echoing what you just said. If they have different packages of personnel for a Hail Mary or a lateral or something, how Devin McCourty isn't on all of them, to me, is mind-boggling. Forget Gronk. You know what I mean? That's his game. And it's just playing center field. That's what he does. I can't imagine how he wasn't even on the field, even with Gronk on there. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and I'll never understand why. Another thing on your website, Matt Doloff, I think is his name.
Yes, yeah, Matt Doloff.
Did you guys see this? They can go 12-4 and be the number 3 seed.
He was talking. It's funny. Matt Doloff at the Beasley Christmas party was breaking this down for me last night. And I didn't know that. And I haven't seen it. I should take a look.
Yeah, because the permutations of seeding can give you a popsicle headache,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Now. But, yeah, there is a way that the Pats could end up being 12-4 and end up as the 3 seed. At this point, I know, look, there are things that can happen. And ultimately, it does feel like the AFC is pretty open. But, I've already convinced myself the number 1 seed is out of it. They could
you
still,
have?
I have, yeah.
Really? I mean, did you see the Kendall Fuller injury with the Chiefs? In their top corner, wrist surgery, going to be out for a while?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, that secondary is already bad. So now Skandrick's in a starting position. Steven Nelson and Skandrick.
Yeah, let me be negative here. Like, okay, I feel like what they need to really worry about is the Houston Texans, who are playing today, and hopefully the Jets can do a favor and win the game at home against them today. The concern for me is the number 2 seed. Obviously, you need the bye. And then when we get into the playoffs, look, that's where I think the Chiefs will ultimately puke on themselves, and they still can end up hosting the AFC Championship game, the Patriots, if they were to get there. But the 1 seed, no, I don't think that's going to happen at this point. John in New Hampshire with some leftover thoughts on last week's Dolphins loss. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Jim, how you doing? Nice to talk to you first time and all that stuff. Basically, the last guy I can relate to, I do construction. That's why I listen to you all day, every day.
Well, thank you, John.
And you know, but basically, I'm just here to talk as a Dolphins fan. Everything I hear about the game, right? Everything you guys, everybody talks about the game. I'm a Dolphins fan, Patriots, I'm surrounded by them. The thing is the Dolphins had, it was, when Kenny Stills went down, he just fell down into a fetal position. If he got that first down, it would have been 3-4 minutes left in the game. The Dolphins would have had first down. And then they controlled the clock. They were only down by 2. They only needed, basically, and they were running down the field. And my point is everybody talked about that last play. Yes, it was magnificent, crazy, a miracle. But before that, all the Dolphins had to do was just control the ball. Kenny Stills went down. And then he dropped the ball after that. My point is, the Dolphins were controlling that game at the end.
Yeah, the Dolphins were in good position. The Dolphins played well. I mean, there's no question about it.
And then they just kept trying to give it away.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. You know, the Kenny Stills play is sort of forgotten. But that was an inexplicable play. I mean, I don't know why he slid down like that. I don't know if he misjudged where the first down marker, whatever the deal was. And then they couldn't pick up the first down on third down. So, but at that point, look, and we've done this all week. You start breaking down, the Patriots could have done this, and Brady deserves blame for his situation. But here's the bottom line, Jim. Everybody knew what the situation was. 69 yards, 7 seconds, 1 tackle, you win. Everything that happened before that, missed extra points, missed field goals, whatever, okay, that's all exposition. It led to this point. Everybody knew what the deal was. You make 1 tackle, and you win the game. That's all you have to do. Didn't do it. Unacceptable.
Yeah, at the last second, the Patriots decided, oh, we're going to out-stupid you, Dolphins. Because you mentioned that, okay, so Stills comes up short.
Yeah.
Now it's 3rd and 1. They've been gouging the Patriots in the run game the
whole
day.
They averaged 9 yards of rush in the
with
game.
With 50-year-old Frank Gore and Brandon Bolden, the ex-special teamer here, they decide not to start Danny Shelton again. Another coaching mistake by Belichick, second week in a row where he's a healthy scratch. and then they try to throw it with Tannehill, and he gets sacked by John Simon. Like, they were doing every dumb thing possible to hand the game to the Patriots, and the Patriots had it until they decided to out-dumb the Dolphins. Just an awful, awful loss. We'll continue to take your calls on that. Pat Steelers, and I do want to touch on this game on Thursday night because I found it wildly entertaining, and you, yeah. Chris, called it the best win in the NFL this whole season.
Yeah.
The Chargers win over the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City. We'll touch on that and take a look at the AFC picture in terms of the playoffs. Next, here on a long commercial-free segment on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 Sports.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
4 seconds on the clock, 28-27, the Chiefs lead, and the Chargers will go for two from the two-yard line. This is the game. Shotgun snap. Rivers rolls to the right, throws to the end zone, caught! It's good! It's good! Mike Williams with the grab! Chargers lead 29-28. There was no one. The closest Chief was in Kansas City, Kansas.
I don't think there's anything this team believes we can't do. Now, that doesn't mean we're always going to do it. But I think, you know, it wasn't a very happy sideline for most of this game. But it wasn't a dejected sideline. Like, here we go again. It wasn't that.
Crazy game on Thursday night. Chargers pull off the, felt like an upset, especially they're down 14 three times in that game, 29-28 the final. Chargers over the Chiefs in Kansas City. That was the final call there, or at least the two-point conversion that they went for. Big stones there, followed by the their quarterback, the fertile fanatic, Philip Rivers, who started off pretty poorly, but boy, big stones on him too. And there's a lot to take away from that game. More than anything else, the Chargers, they're not the San Diego Chargers anymore. They're the L.A. Chargers. They don't have that thing, the ick, that was surrounding them for years. They can go into a place like Pittsburgh, like Kansas City, even though they had lost 9 straight to the Chiefs, and pull off a game. They're good on both sides of the ball. And for the Chiefs, though, my bigger takeaway had to do with them. That's exactly the style of the game on Thursday night, Chris, that you're probably going to see come January. Their defense is just good enough to get them beat in soul-crushing ways. That'll be repeated in the playoffs. And so many people have preached, you know, nationally that that Chiefs team is meltdown-proof because of Patrick Mahomes. And he's damn good. There's some tightness there with him, too, in big spots. And their last series was so Chiefs. Like, that 3-and-out was so fast.
Yeah, it was really quick, and you got sacked on third down.
And so the other thing, too, in terms of their offense, like as dynamic and fascinating of a playmaker as he can be, especially like, you know, getting out of what looks like an immediate sack. There was one play in that first half. He had 3 guys on him. It was like a 3rd and 7, and he's rolling out and makes a strike look like, you know, classic Mike Vick type stuff. Phenomenal. Their playmakers leave a lot to be desired. Like, it was him and, like, Damian Williams and Tyreek Hill for a handful of plays because they doubled up Travis Kelce, and now they have big fat Calvin Benjamin, who's useless. Sammy Watkins looks like he could be done for the year. Like,
they're vulnerable.
Yeah, when it gets tight, they don't really have a lot of playmakers. Now that they don't have Hunt anymore, Kareem Hunt's done for the year with this whole thing that happened with him. So they don't really have really great running backs. Damian Williams, who they picked up off the street, had a good game, but is he going to be able to repeat that? Like, they look. There is a vulnerability there with that Chiefs team. And then there's that whole thing that's always surrounded them in terms of the playoffs and how their continued failures, whether it was Andy Reid or just, well, it's institutionalized failure that surrounded that team. It's like them and the Atlanta Falcons. You go back to the Lynn Elliott game in 1995 where he's missing like 3 or 4 field goals to an inferior Colts team that's led by Jim Harbaugh. Oh, I remember that. It's one of the funnier losses I've ever watched in my life. But the Chiefs, that loss and how Andy Reid handled the end of it too, his bonehead timeout late in the game, it resurrects that old bad clock manager thing. Chargers had 3 seconds of the play clock, no timeouts. Rivers arguing with the ref 15 yards from the ball, and he calls a timeout. What are you doing? This is just what he does. So I looked at that, and I had to kind of laugh. Like, not as much as I doubt this year's Patriots team, I look at the Chiefs and say, oh, man, they're going to do the same thing again come January. They really are. As good as Mahomes has been, they're just going to do this same Chiefs thing.
Yeah, Chiefs are going to Chief, right?
Yeah.
The one thing when I look at that game, certainly the resolve that the Chargers showed, but you see how depleted and vulnerable the Chiefs are. And they're sort of back to what they were before with Alex Smith, except for they have a more dynamic quarterback in Mahomes. In other words, from a weapon standpoint, you're back to it's Kelce, it's Hill, and a bunch of no-name receivers and guys you don't really know about, you know, and they're sort of back in that spot again. And I think that makes them a team that can be beaten. I mean, Mahomes is fantastic. That defense is porous. They give up yards not only against the pass, but also against the run. Check out their run. They're allowing 5 yards of rush.
A lot of hollow sacks with that team, too. You know, I think they had 4 or 5 on Rivers, but ultimately didn't matter. Not really.
Yeah.
You know? So
the secondary is not good.
No, it's not.
It's not good. Eric Berry didn't look good.
Nope.
In his season debut. Reed was asked about him after the game, and you know, basically was saying, well, you know, he gave us the snaps he could give us, but I think Berry would have played more if they thought he looked good, and he didn't. I just think overall the injuries are catching up to that Chiefs team.
And you thought this was the most impressive win of the year in the NFL for the Chargers.
Oh, yeah, for the Chargers, given the spot, like the situation there. Now, the Chargers had their own injury issues, obviously. You know, no Melvin Gordon, no Keenan Allen. And you've lost to this team 9 times in a row. As you mentioned, down 14 points multiple times, down 14 points in the fourth quarter. Super tough environment. You know if you lose this game that the division is over. You can't win the division. Given all of those factors, for them to come back and win the way they did, and then, you know, going for 2 at the end and getting it, to me, most impressive win in the NFL this season.
Yeah, that it's up there. I was impressed with their win in Pittsburgh a few Sundays back, too.
Yeah.
Like, they are... They travel well. That team looks like they could be a tough out. But Phillip Rivers in the playoffs, and I've heard Beatles say this, and I'm with him, like, I don't know. There's a tightness thing that happens with him, too. I know he's a tough SOB.
Sometimes he tries to do too much.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's funny. He's almost like Roethlisberger, who the Patriots are going to see tomorrow, where he's one of these guys where sometimes he just doesn't have the patience or the prudence to let things happen or to throw the ball away. And he's so busy trying to make a play that he does for the other team.
And what's left on their schedule, they have the Ravens next Saturday.
It's going to be a good game.
And they're at home for that. And then they're on the road in their final game of the year against the Denver Broncos, who, you know, would maybe like to try to play the role of spoiler and took a game from them earlier this year. For the Chiefs, they're at the Seahawks, and their defense is playing well. And as much as I've ragged on Pete Carroll, and I think rightfully so throughout his career, to me, he's the NFL Coach of the Year. He's doing it with 3 good players on that roster. It's Baldwin, it's Russell Wilson, and who's the linebacker that's left over? I wanted to
Bobby Wagner.
Bobby Wagner.
I mean, Frank Clark's pretty good. But.
Yeah, but, I mean, they start Barkevious Mingo on that team.
I know. You look at some of the guys they're starting.
It's,
yeah, you're right. They do start Barkevious
Mingo. So that's a tough spot for the Chiefs, and then, you know, they'll beat up on the Raiders at home the final game of the year. But Derek Carr has been playing better as of late, so maybe they want to try to play the role of spoiler there, too. So it's just, you know, I left it, and as impressed as I am with the Chargers, it does feel like, again, as much as I doubt this year's Patriots team,
it's open.
It feels like it is open in the AFC.
Well, and I've said this before, and I will say it again. The thing with the Patriots, when we talk about them here, is we're not judging them against the other teams in the AFC. We're judging them against their own standard, and that's how they get judged. And so relative to the rest of the teams in the AFC this year, they definitely have a shot. You know, for all their foibles, they're right there. But I think we keep waiting for reassurance that they are the real Patriots, that they're a normal Patriots team and it's just going to click, and we haven't seen it yet. So that's when you look at – that's what I'm talking about with this Pittsburgh game. But overall, versus the rest of the AFC, these other teams are flawed, too.
Yeah.
You know, there's no juggernaut team in the AFC this year.
Quickly, I just wanted to correct something here. Of course, I got this wrong because I'm, you know, I have 4 drinks that felt like 40 last night. I said that Steelers-Patriots game in 1997 on a Saturday was the only one that I could remember that the Patriots had played on a Saturday, because we have a couple of games today. You get this token weekend where you get these Saturday games. They're great. It should happen more often. I thought the Pats should be involved more. I was like, they've only had one, 1997. They lose at home to the stupid Cordell Stewart Steelers. No, you were right. You said the I Want to Kiss You, Joe Namath-Susie Colbert game. That was on Saturday night, December 20th, 2003. Thanks to John Sapicetti of the Herald, who tweeted that one in. And how could I forget? How could we forget this one?
Yeah, this is
what
bad
a bonehead! The unbeaten regular season, your favorite of the seasons,
the best. Where's that banner, baby?
Yeah, you want that 16-0 banner?
5.5 championships for the Patriots during this era.
The Saturday night, the 16-0 game, where they had to go into New York and they throw everything but the kitchen sink at the Giants and give them the blueprint on how to beat them in the Super Bowl. About a month and a half later, that game against the Giants, which they squeaked out.
I have 2 happy places. One of them,
I hate that game so much.
One of them is being on the beach in Laguna Beach, California. The other is watching Randy Moss streak down the sideline for that record-setting touchdown. Like, when I'm having a bad day and I just need to go to my happy place, those are 2 places I go.
If I had the ability to get in a time machine and the guy that invented it said, Jim, you could change one thing. Like, I wouldn't go back and, like, stop Hitler or anything like that to help humanity. I would go back and tell the Patriots to lose that game. That night and Saturday night in the Meadowlands, lose this game, because otherwise it's going to catch up with you in the Super Bowl, in Super Bowl 42. You're going to show everything in the blueprint and how to lose to this inferior 10-6 team. You're going to lose the Super Bowl. That's what I would do. help the people and help the world? No. I would tell the Pats to throw that game in week 16, 17.
I thought you'd go back and not trash that hotel room.
Oh, yeah, no, the 2003 when the Red Sox ultimately lost to the New York Yankees, the walk-off with Aaron Boone, no, I would still trash that hotel room. I would do all those other things. Now, there's a lot of regrets that I have, but most of them you got to live with. You build from it. That, no, I'd tell the Pats to lose that game. All right, I've spoken enough about that. As Chris puts his palms into his head into his palms, like, I can't believe I have to work with this lunatic. We're going to get the Sports Hub headlines and welcome in Sean Silver. Hello, Sean, wearing his Hakeem Olajuwon old school shirt. And he's going to tell you what's going on in the world of sports. And we'll come back and kick off the Sports Hub Celtics show this Saturday here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.